Beloved, I appreciate and I am honored for this opportunity. I told my congregation, I said, I get to be one of the keynote speakers at my reunion. And I said, that there are so many wonderful ministers that have been graduated from this school. That is just a highlight for me. And I sincerely mean that. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Brother Powers called me a while back and he says, do you have a comedy skit you do? I said, I am one. And he said, we'd like you to do that and do a little humorous stuff. And I thought he was pulling my leg at first, and he finally convinced me he wasn't. And so I'm very, very grateful to be here. But what I want to do, though, brethren, is start by public service announcement, because I know I'm preaching to or teaching or talking to today some people that are of higher intelligence than the normal person here in America. And we study a lot, and, you know, we look at a lot of research. And I found out now, and you all may know this, too. Y'all know that this pink stuff, this sweetener, causes cancer. Y'all learned that. And we found out recently that the blue stuff causes Alzheimer's disease. Y'all are aware of that. Now being a graduate of Williamstown Bible College, I'm smart now, so I figured this out. What I do now, when I sweeten my drink, I use one of each. And that way, if I get cancer, I won't know it. That's the way to do it. But before I start, is Brother McGuigan in here? Did he come in? He's got a lot more important things to do, though. Brother McGuigan, is he in here? Yes, you are. Thank you. Listen, in his honor, because he's had such an impact on all of our lives, I am, in my comedy, if it's comedy, I'm an equal opportunity insulter, okay? Somebody's already told me I'm going to get sued. But I am not politically correct, okay? So if y'all want political correctness, I'm going to give you like 30 seconds to get on out of here, okay? But anyway, Brother McGuigan, in his honor, and Brother McGuigan, please, but y'all know he is from Ireland. And us Greens are originally from there. They kicked us out way long ago. Brother McGuigan, please forgive my poor Irish accent. I'm still working on the English one. And the misplacing of all the towns and anything. But anyway, this fella, he walks into a bar one night. And he sits down, and he's sitting there. He's the only one in the bar, him and the bartender, and he's in there. And after a little bit, another fella comes in. They sit down. He sits down up there at the bar by the other guy, and they introduce themselves, say a couple of nice things to each other. And one of them finally says, mate, I can't help but notice that you got a bit of an Irish accent. He's, oh, yeah, yeah. He said, I'm from Ireland. I was born there. He said, oh, where were you born? He said, I was born in Gloucester County or whatever, you know. And he said, when were you born there? He said, 1971. He said, man, isn't that amazing? He said, I was born there also. And I was born there in 71 as well. Isn't this a coincidence? And they were just really going on about that. And finally one of them said, well, where did you go to school at? Oh, I went to school at St. Patrick's School of Perpetual Punishment, you know. And the other one said, I did too. And, well, when did you graduate from there? And I graduated at the same time. Isn't this amazing that we might have known each other and from the same place in good old Ireland, and we graduated and now we're here in the same town in America. And before long, man, they got their arms around each other and they're crying and missing home and singing the Irish national anthem, and the phone rings and the bartender answers and he said, yeah, honey, I'm going to be closing up here pretty quick. He said, yeah, it's a slow night. He said, nothing much happening here. He said, the O'Malley twins are drunk again. Okay. All right. That was free. I need to try to get in my comedy skits now. But anyway, Brother, I'll tell you what. Precious memories we talk about. The first time I ever spoke here, the first, very first time. They bring you up and I was scared. I'm telling you, I was new at this. I'd never, you know, given speeches and things like that. And I was really scared. And I got up and I said with great sincerity, the first words I said in the little podium was at WBC was, I'm as nervous as a grasshopper in a chicken pen. And Dan Gulley falls out of his chair laughing, which really made me even that much more nervous. But you know what? Time has gone by, brethren. And I'm telling you now, I'm proud to stand before you, and I'm not as nervous as a grasshopper in a chicken pen anymore. In fact, all this good singing and all the good fellowship and the reunion we've had, I feel so excited. I feel like I could put out hell with a water pistol. So it's different after 35 years, you know, you can get back together. But I appreciate that. When David asked me if I had anything, I said, what I do, but I've written this thing some time back called "This Is the Way I Was Raised Up." Because from talking with people, I found out I was raised differently than a lot of people, I reckon. And so I said, I can do that. And he said, that's good. So I thought I'd begin at the beginning. That's always a good place to begin. And I was born at a very early age, about 9 months. Now, my mom and daddy, they had 5 boys, no girls. I told Mama one time why, and she got mad at me and kicked me out of the house all day, and I probably can't repeat it here. But anyway, so Mom and Daddy, Mama wanted 2 boys, 2 girls, ended up with 5 boys, and y'all, we were all born ugly, and then we backslid. My Mama used to tell us all the time, very pragmatic. She'd say, you boys got your daddy's looks and my brains, and you was cheated both ways. And that's true. In fact, they said I was so ugly when I was born that the doctor slapped my daddy instead of me. And it was pretty bad. In fact, the doctor looked at my face and then my rear end and said, Miss Green, I'm sorry to tell you, but you've got Siamese twins. And I was, man. And some things you just have to admit. And I was so ugly that my mama would borrow the neighbor's baby to take to church on Sunday. She'd leave me at home with the dogs and then get upset when I pee on the fire hydrant. So, you know. But my oldest brother, bless his heart, he wasn't only ugly, he had buck teeth. And I mean bad buck teeth. That boy was buck teeth so bad he could eat apples through a picket fence. So, the problem was, though, is we was ugly and poor both. Now, brethren, that's what makes it tough. When you're ugly and rich, you do all right. Do you notice that? You ever seen Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones? And he got all them pretty women. That boy is so ugly, he have to sneak up on a glass of water to drink it. And he got all these beautiful women around. When you're rich, you can be ugly and you do all right. But when you poor and you ugly, that's bad. And so we wasn't only ugly, we was poor. I'm talking, we was as broke as a pickpocket in a nudist camp. Now, I mean, think about it. Yeah. Anyway, no, I'm serious, man. If we were so poor, if our neighbor threw our dog a bone, he had to signal for a fair catch, man. 5 greens, you know. And when you're poor, anything can turn into a crisis because you kind of live in that crisis mode all the time, you know, kind of from meal to meal. And one time I remember our bathroom caught fire, but we were able to put it out before it reached the house. Now, you younger folk, you don't have a clue as to what I'm saying, do you? Up here, y'all heard of an outhouse, right? Okay, all right. I'll tell you what, we were poor, brethren. In 3rd grade, my math teacher brings me up to the front of the classroom, wants to teach some math, and she said, Marvin, said, if you were to stick your hand in your right pocket, and there was 2 quarters and a nickel in there, and she said, if you were to reach your left hand in your left pocket, and there was 3 dimes and 5 pennies in there, she said, what would you have? I said, somebody else's pants. Brethren, we were so poor that in our family, a 7-course meal was a possum and a 6-pack. And we ate a lot of stuff that we hunted, including armadillo. We had rattlesnakes and stuff like that, and including armadillo. We called armadillo possum on a half shell. But anyway, it was pretty good eating. But there was times, you know, that we just, our pickings was kind of slim. But I know we always had plenty to eat. And the reason I know that is every time one of us would ask for a second helping, Daddy would say, you've had plenty. But anyway, while growing up, brother, I was known in those days as a hyper kid. They didn't have terms like, what is it, ADHD or whatever now. And, you know, it was a hyper kid. And, of course, the cure in that day was for a hyper kid was to beat them. Yeah, that was a cure, right? When my oldest boy was real young, we was in a shopping center, and he got out of hand, you know, and I did like my parents do, man. You know, where we got in trouble was where we got disciplined at. So I whooped my kid a little bit, and this woman come running up in her shopping cart. "What are you doing? What are you doing?" I said, "I'm whipping my boy. You familiar with this concept?" She said, "Oh, no, you don't do that. You don't spank a child. You don't do that to children." I said, "What do you mean you don't do that to children?" She said, "You're supposed to give them things like time out." She said, "Hadn't you ever heard of time out?" I said, "Honey, in my family, it was knocked out. What the time out?" But anyway, you know, that's what you did. You know, we would get daily whoopings. And brethren, I mean a whooping. If you're not from the South, you may not know what a whooping is. But a whooping is different from a spanking. Now, you need to understand that. I've had spankings. We walk outside and go, "That wasn't nothing." You got a whooping. You crawled for 3 days. We get a daily whooping because my daddy believed a whooping a day keeps the evil away. And he'd actually come home work and first thing he'd say after kissing mamas, "Which one gets a whooping today?" You know, and mama had already done whooped us, but we'd get a double whammy when daddy got home. And most of the whippings we got was for fighting. They was five boys and mom and dad in a very, very small house, and it was very cramped and very crowded, and we fought a lot. The fight would usually begin when one of my brothers hit me back. But man, we get wore out, and my mom is so pragmatic, man. She, our parents loved us, and that was a blessing. And mama, you know, it'd be right before bedtime, and I'd already had, well, depending on the day, however many whoopings, and mama'd come in there, and she'd grab me, and she'd hug me, you know, kiss me on the forehead, and she'd say, "Honey," she said, "I know that God's got great plans for you." She said, "I know one day Jesus is going to use you in a powerful way." She said, "But until then, I'm going to beat the hell out of you." No, she doesn't. I know. I guess it worked. I don't know. But anyway, at one time, I guess I got a little more hyper than normal, and one of the doctors told Mama she ought to put me on nerve pills. That's what they called them in them days. And I stayed on them for about a week. I quit taking them things, man, because I was being nice to people I didn't even like. So had to give those up. But my daddy's answer to everything, besides whoopings, was hard work and continually. I mean, we worked. We worked. I teach 2 Bible classes at Georgia Christian School down there where we are. And them kids today don't know what work is. So help me. Brethren, isn't it horrible when the number one health problem among our kids today is obesity? You know? They go down to McDonald's and get them McNuggets and Big Macs and McMuffins and then wonder why they get McFat. You know, my goodness, they need to get off of that couch. All they do is this number, right? Or this number, or on a computer all day. We come home from school and got out of our, quote, school clothes into our work clothes, which wasn't any real different, and we had to get to work. My daddy, we worked hard. I was 12 years old before I found out my name wasn't Gitwood. We worked now, I mean, we cropped tobacco, we baled hay that was weighed about as much as you did at 12 years of age, man. We tossed watermelon. You talking about, you want to get rid of ADHD in a kid, you stick him on a truck where they tossing watermelon at you. You get knocked off that truck by a 40-pound watermelon a couple times, and you learn to pay attention. You do. That's the cure for everything, man. Put them to work. We work hard, man, until you have come home at the end of a day, and I mean the sun done set a long time ago, and sat in a bathtub of cold water and fall asleep in the tub because you're so exhausted. You ain't worked yet. No, I'd wake up when I'd go under. You'd be laying in that tub, you go, boy, when you can't breathe, you come up. But hey, we work now, and that's the way it ought to be. That's what's wrong with America. The Bible said if you don't work, neither should you eat, right? I don't want to start preaching, but I'm telling you what, if we let some people go hungry for a little while, They get themselves a job now. Anyway, that's free. But brother, we worked in the field. We worked wherever we could find it, okay? I mean, fields, the farms, in that hot sun down south, man. I mean, just boiling sweat and everything. And a couple times I got bear caught. Y'all know, you from down, so y'all know what bear caught is, right? Y'all call it, I think, heat stroke up here. But anyway, and y'all ain't got heat up here. Man, alive, I was in Nitro, West Virginia. People come out of church one Sunday, 85 degrees. We about to die, Brother Green. We about to, in July, if it is 85 in July in Georgia, we'd be praising the Lord. Man, alive. But in y'all's defense, I'd never seen snow till I come up here to Williamstown Bible College. I know that's hard for y'all to believe. But anyway, we worked hard, brethren. We got jobs wherever we could. In fact, a couple of my jobs weren't too bad. One summer, I was a lifeguard for one summer. But some blue kid got me fired, so one, two, three, yeah, okay. Yeah. You got it. All right. But that's one of them time jokes. You catching it as you go, right? All right, hang on. But then I got promoted, man. I actually had a job at 18 years of age where I had 250 people under me. I mowed the grass in the cemetery. But them folk don't argue with you, so it was a pretty good job. If one ever did, I was going to leave. But brethren, I'll tell you what, my parents really did instill in their youngers a strong work ethic. And I thank God for it. I'm serious. I thank God for it, because if they had not, I would not have been able to survive at Williamstown Bible College. That was work. And then, of course, as we grow up, we get an education. My daddy had to drop out of school in the middle of the ninth grade because his father was an alcoholic, and he was the oldest boy in the family, and he had to drop out of school to support his family, literally, in that day, and that's what he did. So him only having a ninth grade education, his standard for us was a C. He said, you bring your report card home, you better not have anything less than a C. He said, a C is normal, and if you made less than a C, you got in trouble. Now, we didn't get paid for good grades like kids today do. But if we made less than a C, we got a whooping. Yeah. So Daddy said, C's normal, you can make a C, but we weren't normal. we weren't the sharpest knives in the drawer, unfortunately. And in fact, man, when I was in sixth grade, I noticed my classmates treated me real different, as though I was something different than the rest of them. But they still liked me because I drove them to school. I was so excited, brother, when I graduated sixth grade that I cut myself shaving. It was just really so. And when I finally, you get through high school now, and I'll tell you what, there's those in high school they graduate. What all is it? Cum laude, magna cum laude, summa cum laude, and all that. I graduated, thank the Lord. Man, when I finally graduated high school, I spent my entire Social Security check that night. Boy, I didn't do it. But it took a while, When you're poor like that, sometimes it takes a while. And I tell people, I really enjoyed sixth grade, all 3 years of it. It was great. But you know what? Then, brethren, something happens to us guys, and you become teenagers, And there's those awkward teenage years, But you begin to learn a bit more, sometimes just from life's experiences, My daddy would say that we learned as much from what he called the University of Hard Knocks when you do regular schooling, and we did. And when I become a teenager, I began to learn a few things. Like being from South Georgia, I learned that Yankee was one word. Some of y'all can relate, yeah. Anyway, you learn a lot of things, too. I was in a post office one day. There was this nice-looking young lady wearing some blue jeans, and on the back it said, "Gas." So I said, "Okay, 190 pounds. She slapped me. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, I began, you get into them teenage years, and I became better looking. Because we worked hard now. We really worked hard. And when you work from a kid on throwing watermelon and baling hay and working all that, you get kind of bulked up. Now, I mean, I wasn't nowhere like Jim Witt, but I weren't no Barney Fife either, And so I guess I started to get a little bit better looking, because a lot of girls in my teenage year would say, "You're a real Don Juan." And I knew that because every time I'd ask one out, she'd say, "I done want nothing to do with you." So I'll tell you, I was a time, brethren, my dad died when I was 16. We were lukewarm Christian, then fell away completely after that. And so I was a devout heathen for a good while. And we had a preacher neighbor in our neighborhood, and it was a real rough area. I found out early on why they called them neighborhoods, because all our neighbors were hoods. But anyway, yeah, it was a real rough neighborhood, man. They was kids there that stand on your eyelids just for the fun of it. And we was running around one night, you know, just being wild younguns and everything. We had a guy that lived on our street. He worked for the city full-time with a part-time Baptist preacher. His name was Kenny Sims. Everybody called him Uncle Kenny. Nobody related to him. But we just had names like that for each other. Everybody called him Uncle Kenny. And he'd been burning a big old pile of wood and debris that he had piled up one night. And, of course, that run around the neighborhood, one of them dark nights, cloudy, no stars in the sky, anything, and we could see the fire burn, so we all kind of got over there, and Uncle Kenny was there, and them coals, them wood had burnt down the big old coals, and they were bright in that dark, you know, and Uncle Kenny saw an opportunity, and he looks over his rake at us, and he said, "Boys, come here." We gathered around them coals, he said, and he looked right at me, because I was the head heathen, and he says to me, he says, "Boys, say, you see them coals?" "Well, yeah, of course we saw them." "Yeah, Uncle Kenny, we see them coals." He said, "You know how hot them coals are? Them coals are hot, Uncle Kenny." He said, "Do you know that hell is at least a million times hotter than that?" We said, "Yeah, we're sure of that, Uncle Kenny." And he looked right at me, and he took his iron rake and he stirred them coals up to where they got even brighter, and the sparks flew up in the sky, and he said, "Marvin Green, aren't you concerned about the temperature in hell?" And I said, "I sure am." I said, "Because, buddy, if that place ever freezes over, then a lot of girls are going to owe me a date." But anyway, I know some of you girls have said that, right? Well, I survived those 10 years miraculously. I became a young adult. I decided I needed to get right with God because He disciplined me severely and rightfully so. And so I was working with my congregation in my hometown, and we went on a youth rally in a congregation in Alabama. And there was a fellow there by the name of Ron Golston who was speaking. And the next thing I knew, I woke up in Williamstown, West Virginia. I don't know what happened. And so then I went to Williamstown Bible College. I tell people that was a school that changed my life, literally. It was a difficult time, man. It was a difficult time. There were days I thought I'd die. And then there were days I prayed that God would kill Ron Goldstein. Now, brethren, I was a heathen. You understand, I hadn't been a heathen for too long, so I still had to get this Christianity on right. But all them memory verses he gave us, boy, I mean, he was big on memorizing Scripture. I'd been out of high school for 4 years, and I wasn't prepared for college. And I was worried how I'd fit in here, because I knew there'd be a lot of very smart students here at this college. And I knew that a lot of young people that was coming fresh out of high school, and I thought, man, I'm going to have to go up there and try to keep up with them really smart students. And I was really worried until I met Earl Anderson and Jeff Walker. And I thought, well, things might be all right. I'll tell you, and I got a little taste of it when Ron Golston, y'all know how he would just call you up to the front and want you to recite something. And he calls Jeff Walters up and he says, now, Earl and Jeff got here before I did, so I didn't know them all that well. And Ron told Jeff, said, I want you to recite the Lord's Prayer. Jeff goes up there real confident like. Earl's sitting there, and I said, Earl, I don't believe that man knows the Lord's Prayer. Earl said, yeah, he does. Yeah, he grinned. He does. He does. I'm sure he does. I said, I'll tell you what, I'm willing to bet you $10, and $10 is big money. I'm willing to bet you $10 Jeff don't know the Lord's Prayer. Earl grinned real big, said, all right, you on. I got it. You know, gambling in Bible college hadn't dawned on us yet either. So Jeff goes up there, and he rears back in that deep, baritone voice of his. He says, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Earl's sitting there going, grinning at me. I handed Earl the $10 bill and said, man, I didn't think he'd know the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
And Ron Golson hung his head and wept.
But I'll tell you what,
brother, I wanted to be spiritual because I was 110% heathen, so I thought I got a lot of lost time to make up for it, so I was trying to hedge my bets, man. I was even writing the Pope. I mean, I really wanted to cover all my bases. I was writing the Pope, but the letters would be returned, and they'd be returned to me unopened. And I thought, well, what's up with that? So I took them to Eddie Powers one day, and I said, Eddie, I've been trying to write the Pope, and he won't respond. I wonder what's going on. And Eddie looked at the front of the envelopes I'd been sending, and he said, well, for starters, Marvin, you don't spell Pope with two O's.
No. But, yeah. But
we learned a lot since then, haven't we? But then came marriage. You know, we all get married, and I decided to get married because I got tired of finishing my own sentences. I love David Powers with all my being. There's only one time I was ever mad at him, and it's right after our wedding. He married us, married Kathy and I, and we get there. Now listen, this is serious. On a Sunday. And I run my bus route that day. It didn't dawn on anybody at Williamstown Bible College to say, this boy's getting married this afternoon. Let's let him have off his bus route. I run my bus route that day, come in from the bus route, literally got ready for the wedding. So we rush in here. We're getting ready. David comes up to me and says, I need your marriage license.
What?
I left it at the house. And the ceremony about to begin. I mean, we was ready to walk out. I mean, we was in one of them rooms ready to walk out. I mean, it was all beginning. I said, I don't have them there at the house. He said, I got to sign them. I said, I'm sorry, Brother Powell. I don't have them there at the house. He said, you swear you got them. I said, I promise you I got them things. He said, all right, I'm going to go ahead and do the ceremony, but you better get them things to me. I said, okay. And so we did the ceremony. We get through the ceremony. He made mention, you're not legally, technically married to hunter's license. So we get through it and everything, and we go to the reception. We go literally from the reception, walk into this building to get our AA degree for the 2-year, Bible college that we've been here. And so we do all that. By the time we get home, it's late. Well, I'm a Christian. I want to consummate my marriage. I'm trying to be gentle here. My dear wife had other ideas. She said, no. What do you mean? She said, Brother Powers, and Kathy was raised here under David Powers. Whatever he said was in. Brother Powers said, we ain't technically married yet. You gotta have that thing. You gotta have that marriage license, honey. I said, sweetie, we're learning in Bible college that the Bible says we're not under law any longer. We're under grace. And so have mercy. I said, we said I do. She said, we said I do, but you ain't. None of that marriage license gets signed by David Powers. I jumped up. I was going to take that. It was like 12:30, and I was going to take that thing and come to his house and knock on his door and say, you put your signature right here. Anyway, I did it. She talked me out. But I laid there all night, as frustrated as an albino midget in a hitchhiking in a deep snowstorm. But anyway. Somebody, a friend of mine said, Brother Green, it's unreasonable. You shouldn't be mad at Brother Powers. None of that was his fault. I said, when a dog's chasing a pretty little female, he ain't reasonable. Anyway, we better move on because I'll have to repent tomorrow and I don't want to. Okay. All right. Y'all listen, Kathy's mom, and two older sisters were wonderful, wonderful cooks. They are to this day. But Kathy was a lot younger than the two older sisters, and so they'd run her out of the kitchen, and that was a horrible thing for me because when we got married, she could not cook. I'm telling you, the first meal we ever had, it took her an hour to cook minute rice. I had her a real nice birthday gift, and I wanted to hide it in a place I knew she'd never look, so I put it in the oven. But I tell you what, as y'all can see, she began to do a whole lot better when I finally convinced her that the smoke alarm was not a timer. But brethren, I'll tell you, during those days, you know, you're in Bible college, and y'all know how intense Williamstown Bible College was, and you're newly married and living on, you know, just love almost. I mean, very little money coming, everything was really, really tough. And you know, the pressures of life can kind of get to you. And I got to admit to you that not long after we married, I tried to drown all my troubles. And y'all know you can't do that. I wasn't able to do that because I couldn't get my father-in-law near the water. But anyway, yeah. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. But I'll tell you, while you know, we were struggling those days, as you all can relate, man. Times were tough and money was tight. My wife went to this real expensive dress store. She swore she was just going to win the shop, you know, just kind of looking around. She come back with an expensive dress. And I was just, man, fit to be tied. And, well, we can't afford it. How in the world? What in the world? What if I just got over you? She said, honey, I knew I wasn't supposed to buy it. She said, but I was looking at that pretty dress. I thought I'd just try it on. There wasn't no harm in that. She said, I tried that thing on. I'm looking in the mirror, and the devil whispers in my ear. And he said, you sure look good in that dress. And I said, honey, why didn't you do what the Bible says? Get behind me, Satan. She said, I did. And he said, ooh, you sure look good back here, too. Anyway. Moving right along. I used to give a fellow that I trusted a little yellow flag. I said, if I get out of hand, raise that flag. And he did it constantly, so I took it away. Anyway. No, y'all, my wife and I, you know, we'd have them arguments. I tell people we never argued. Sometimes you could hear us reasoning things out two blocks away. But anyway, we would have our real arguments like any family, like any husband and wife, you know. And here's the thing. Here's what's bad about an argument with a woman, okay, with a wife. Is once you have an argument with them, you've got to spend 2 days convincing them you love them. You know, one argument, man, and it's like, you know, love me. And we had this argument, and you know, I said, I do love you, honey. Now quit interrupting my baseball show. No. No, sweetie, I love you. You know, for 45 minutes, I love you, sweetie, I love you. Here's all the ways I love you. You know I love you and everything. And finally, you're just getting them convinced a little bit. And she said, a little tear in her eye, she said, would you love me enough? Would you die for me? I said, honey, I'm wishing I was dead right now. Anyway, yeah, it can be rough. And y'all, you learn a lot about your fellow Christians here in this congregation of thing when you're in the Bible college. And I found out something about Susie Powers before she ever got married. Where's Susie? Is Susie in here? Oh, yeah, good. Now, I'm glad she's in the back. I heard one time Susie comes in, man, and she'd been dating this young man for a good while. Not the one she got now, but she'd been dating this guy for a good while. And she comes in and she says to her mama, she says, Mama, said Mitchell proposed to me tonight. And Dee said, well, honey, that's wonderful. Why are you so sad? And she said, he just told me tonight, he admitted for the first time that he's an atheist. She said, Mama, he doesn't even believe in hell. And Dee said, oh, honey, you marry that man anyway. Between the two of us, we'll show him just how wrong he is. And Susie. Now, Susie, she married, I mean, she was raised in the Powers household, man. She was absolutely just shocked at that. And she said, Mama, I can't believe that you would even insinuate that I should marry an atheist. She said, in fact, I'd just as soon marry the devil himself. And so she did. Anyway. Now, y'all gotta love me to get to heaven, right? No, but I'll tell you, you know what? You get married and then comes your children, right? That's his natural part. And God has blessed my wife and I with three wonderful children who are wonderful Christians and they're married Christians and that. We're rich because of that. Seriously, that's a wonderful one thing. I remember our oldest boy was being born. We were in the waiting room. This was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we were in the waiting room. There I was. Of course, my wife was in there giving birth. And and there were some other men in there. And we were all talking. You know, we had the same thing in common and everything. And finally, a nurse comes in and says, "Mr. Brown, you won't believe this. We didn't realize it, but you just had twins." And Mr. Brown scratches his chin and says, "How appropriate," because he says, "I work for the Doubletree Hotel Company." And then about 10 minutes later, this nurse comes back in and she said, "Mr. Smith," said, "we can't, but boy, I just had triplets." And he says, "Well, how appropriate, because I work for the AAA, American Automobile Association," said, "and I had triplets." And by that time, this other fellow gets up and he's about leaving. I said, "Fella, your wife's in there giving birth to your young'un and you're going to leave?" He said, "Man, I'm getting out of here because I work for 7-Up. You know, you pray a lot when your wife is pregnant, and while she was pregnant, Kathy prayed for healthy children. I prayed they wouldn't look like Norman Krebs. I'm serious about that. But your kids are such a source of joy, and they can also try you sometime. My son was having trouble one time in history, like sixth grade, and I said, "Son, I don't understand this." I said, "Man, when I was in school, I said history was one of my favorite subjects, and I don't know why you can't get this." He said, "Daddy, when you was in school, there wasn't near as much of it." But anyway, and Nathan, my middle boy, he was 6 years old. He was out in by my garden one day. We always grew a big garden. He was out in my garden, and he was filling. Our neighbor looked over the fence, and he saw him doing that, and he says, "What are you up to there, Nate?" And Nathan, a tear coming down his eye, and he said, "My goldfish died, and I've just buried him." And the neighbor said, "Well, Nathan, that's an awfully big hole for a goldfish, isn't it?" And Nate said, "Yeah, he's inside your cat." Anyway. Well, yeah. I'll tell you, brethren, what happens, though, is your kids grow up too quick, don't they? They really do. Those of you that have little children now, I'm serious when I say you enjoy them because you're gonna turn around, they're gonna be gone, and they grow up so very quickly. But one of the great mysteries in life to me is how that idiot who married your daughter can be the father of the smartest grandchildren in the world. You know, how does that work? That's wonderful, though. I'm telling you what. But brethren, then you have a career, right? You get in Bible college. We learn how to preach. Listen, if you sit under David Powers and can't preach out of that, you're dead. You just well go and let them pull the dirt over you. But you have a lot of interesting things that happen during your career as a preacher. And I know y'all have also. We could all share some things. I'll give you a few. In fact, when I was still here in Bible college, I got called down to South Georgia to do, quote, a gospel meeting. I hadn't even been preaching yet. And Eddie Powers was nice enough to loan me some of his sermons. I tried to preach them like Eddie, you know. But anyway, and I got down there, and I should have known better because I was born and raised down south. They had me over this lady's house, an elderly lady, widow lady, you know, and she had cooked a big meal for me. I mean, a good old Southern meal. Brethren, that's the chicken fried in lard. If you ain't never had that, you've got to before you die. I'm serious. You have got to do that. But anyway, somebody says, "Brother Green, how do you know you was called into the ministry?" I said, "I dreamed about fried chicken one night." But anyway, I'm there at her house, you know, and I'm trying to be real spiritual. And she fixes this meal. I mean, a gourmet meal for me. And really, really worked hard to do it. And she said, "Brother Green, come eat." And I was stupid enough back then. I said, "Sister, I really appreciate it." I said, but if I eat right before I preach, I said, I eat a lot and that food pushes up on me and I can't breathe right. And I just can't preach good. And I said, I'm sorry. I said, "I appreciate your efforts, but I didn't eat." Now, I've learned that. Now, I'll eat three times. But anyway, get up there that night, preach my heart out. Sermon was over. People coming to the back door, you know, shaking your hand and everything. She come by. I had insulted this dear lady. And I said, "Sister, how'd I do in my sermon tonight?" She looked at me and said, You just as well as that. Yeah. Yeah, I know. You learned a great lesson then. Anyway, I was in Kansas. We lived out in Kansas, man. And Brandon, I'm telling you, Kansas is different than West Virginia. I'll get on. It's flat out there. It's flat out there, and no trees. The trees are so far apart, the woodpeckers have to tear a sack lunch, you know. And, I mean, Kansas is one of them places where you can literally watch your dog run away from home for 3 days. And so anyway, a lot of large farms out there. I asked a farmer one time, honest truth, I said, how many acres you farm? And he very red-faced, shamefully said, I have a small farm. I don't farm very much. I said, how many acres? He said, only 2,000. You know, they had 10,000 acre farm, big farms, big ranchers and everything. So one day, this very well-known rancher, man, he had tons and tons of land, all kind of cattle, very well-to-do gentleman. He came and visited our small little congregation. I was impressed, man. I wanted to impress him. They say you have one chance to make a good first impression. And so man, he come in. He's your typical rancher guy. He's got the big old 10-gallon hat, the handlebar mustache, the real thick dark eyelashes, the blue jeans, the boots on, you know. And he comes in there and he sits down. And he stays the whole time. We were very grateful, you know. And afterwards, you know, back there shaking hands. And he come by and I greeted him. I called him by his name and told him how glad we were that he was with us today and that we were certainly impressed that he was here. And I said, I always like to ask our visitors, you know, did I make a good first impression, you know, what did you think of everything? And he reared back, you know, and he said, well, boy, said, your sermon today, said, that sermon reminded me of the horns on my steer. I said, the horns on your steer? He said, yeah, there was a point here and a point there and a lot of bull in between. Anyway, so... Yeah, that's right. Went to a country church one time, and way out in the sticks, man. We were so far out in the woods they had to pump sunshine in, you know, and little old country church, and you know, when you're young, how many of y'all, and I know I'm not the only one, how many of y'all have your smoking and drinking sermon that you preach in early? You ever have them? Oh, come on, you bunch of liars. I know good and well. I'm the only one ever preach again. You preach on smoking and drinking, I hopefully again it, you know. But anyway, I get up there and I preach against smoking, man. I mean, I make a case, you know. And at the end of the lesson, I'm outside, you know, little old country church, big old trees all over the place. And this little old lady comes up. She had to be in her 80s, if not pushing 90. And she had a big old wad of tobacco right there. And she comes right up to me and she says, preacher, I'm so glad you preached on the sins of smoking. That needed to be told. And I said, Miss, I don't mean to be unkind. I said, but you're telling me that when you got a big old wad of tobacco in your mouth? And she says to me, that's exactly what I mean. Says, anybody that burns up something that tastes this good, why, they ought to die and go to hell. That's what she told me. Yeah, you get some experiences. And then, brethren, if you ever talk as much as we do, you have what I call film, F-I-M. Y'all ever do that, foot and mouth? No, none of y'all have ever done that. I'm glad I get to speak today and confess all my sins, okay? Y'all never done anything like this. But I teach at Georgia Christian School, 2 Bible classes a day in school session, and we have a really wonderful president there, and he and I are very, very close, and he's a real good fellow, good Christian guy. And we had him speak at our congregation one time, and he got up in the pulpit, and he said some really nice things about me. You're always grateful for that. But he said, but one thing we have learned at Georgia Christian School about your preacher, he says, we have learned that there's no filter between his brain and his mouth. I know y'all didn't know that. But anyway, and so, Brandon, I have done that foot in my mouth disease in my sermons. I don't know if y'all have ever done that. You know, we had just moved to Nitro, West Virginia. I mean, this was like my second sermon there, brand spanking new. One of our elders sat right there on the front where Dick's sitting, and he listened to every little thing I said. And I was preaching on sin and how you can get on the edge of sin and get in trouble. And I, my text was Genesis 13 verse 12, preaching about Abraham and Lot and how they've come to a division because of their large herds and everything, and they're fussing and fighting. And I said, y'all, the Genesis 13, 12 says that, and it quotes in King James, and Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom. Well, I'm excited, man, and I'm preaching away. And I said, I bring down the king down there. Brethren, the Bible says here in Genesis 13, 12, that the trouble began when Lot pinched his tent towards Sodom. And my elder falls almost on the floor. Yellow card? Okay. I'm sorry, Lord. Be with the starving pygmies in New Guinea. Okay. And I said it twice. And I didn't even know what I said. Y'all never messed up like that, right? Anyway, I was preaching real hard on Ephesians 6:16. When I preach real hard, I get in trouble. When I preach it on that, where the Bible says we're to take up the shield of faith so that we can quench the fiery darts of the devil. And I got the F and the D reversed in fiery darts. And so, yeah, that wasn't good either. Yeah, it was tough. Don't think. You know, you just, no filter, my... It hit him. Yeah. Had an elderly sister mad at me. A lady in the church, man. She was really upset at me. My daughter said, little old ladies don't get mad. I said, honey, you ain't lived long enough. Them little old ladies can get mad, boy. And she was mad at me for some reason, boy. And she come at me. I mean, geez, she was so mad at me, she could have mentioned my name and spit and caught the ground on fire. And she was all upset. She come in and she was real mean like. She said, Brother Green, I want you to know I'm going to be praying for you. And before I even thought, I said, I appreciate it, lady, because I need the prayers and you showed me the practice. That wasn't good. Yeah, I know. But anyway. But even outside of the pulpit, man, I had to go to Charleston, West Virginia one time from Nitro, about a 15-mile drive. Got a call at about 12:31 in the morning. One of our members had been in a really bad wreck, and I was up at the hospital with him all night long. Hadn't gotten any sleep. And was there all night. Coming back home, it was about 4:30 in the morning. It was still dark, and I was tired, man. I was tired. I know I was weaving on the road and everything, and I knew I had to get back home, get right back to work. You know, wasn't going to be able to get any sleep that day, and so I'm trying to plan my day out and not paying attention. All of a sudden, here come them blue lights, you know. I think, oh, man, this is all I need. I pull over the side of the road. This big old policeman comes waddling up to the car, you know, and he's got authority. He takes that big old flashlight and it shines it right in my face, man. It blinds you, you know. And I'm already irritated. And he looks at me and he says, boy, your eyes are red. You been drinking? I didn't think. I said, your eyes are glazed. You been eating donuts? Yeah, I know. Get out of the car, boy. Yeah. Ran into an old friend one time I hadn't seen for a good while, you know, and he had this girlfriend with him that had red hair. Obviously, they were very close, wrapped all around each other, and I said, man. I said, I see that you got a new girlfriend. I said, I hope she's nicer than that mean old blonde witch you used to date. I said, whatever happened to her? She said, I dyed my hair red. I know. No filter. But, brother, let me tell you what. The worst time I lose it is in Walmart. You know that? I go to Walmart about once a month just to test my faith. Because if you go in that store and stay for 45 minutes without cussing, you're spiritual. I mean, every time I go to Walmart, there's some big old woman in there with spandex on. Now, I'm just saying, okay? Another public service announcement, all right? Guys, gentlemen, y'all, if you big enough that you give your bathtub stretch marks, don't wear spandex. You ain't going to look good, all right? You ain't going to look good. I saw a lady cut wind one day in them things. That bubble run around 5 minutes looking for a way of escape. Okay, anyway. All right, we're moving on. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Y'all know who's going to be on the front row Sunday morning, right? Yeah. Anyway, You go in there, man, and you know what? I'm old-fashioned enough to think that when you go in to Walmart and you spend your week's paycheck on them four bags of groceries you bring out of there, that the cashier ought to say thank you. Is that asking too much? Man, you go in there, they take your money back, you get ready to leave, and I thought, okay, I'm going to set the right example. They just set that man there, you know, and little old pretty girl there, you know, with the purple hair and the tattoos and all that kind of stuff, you know, and she just sat there chewing on that gum, and I said, all right, I'm going to set the right example. So I said, thank you, sweetie. And she said, no problem. What is that? If it's a problem, she shouldn't be handling money. Good grief. Why can't people just say, thank you for coming in and dropping your paycheck here today so I can have a job? It's just an easy kind of concept. But anyway, you go in there and it's so aggravating, you know, and you gotta go to the oil section and get a quart of oil and walk three blocks back to the front. But anyway, I was in there one day, brethren, and there was this tattooed, pierced, foul mouth woman cussing her two little kids, man. Oh, man. The Bible said, Jesus said, if you cause one of these little ones of mine to stumble, it'd be better for you to tie a millstone around your neck. I was getting ready to go to the garden department and get me a couple of cement blocks. That woman was foul talking to them little bitty kids. I have a heart for kids, man. That was irritating me. Them little kids had their heads hanging down like that, you know. And that woman was meaner than a bobcat with bursitis, you know. And I'm telling you, I'm getting madder than a midget with a yo-yo. And I'm just starting to boil, you know. And I'm saying, you ever talk to yourself, y'all do that, you know. I'm saying, walk away, Marvin. Walk away. Walk away. Just walk away and shut up. And then next thing you know, you find yourself, you hear yourself saying something. And I did. I'm trying to be diplomatic. I said, lady, you've got two good-looking young'uns there. I said, who are their daddies, plural? Ooh, she took off. What the bleep, 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 bleep makes you bleep, 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 think that these kids have two different daddies? I said, cause, lady, they ain't a man on earth that make love to you twice. Okay. Anyway, foot and mouth disease, brethren, all right? I'm being honest. I'm repenting. Okay. But brethren, you know what we do? We grow older very quickly, don't we? We really do. I mean, from the time you're born until, you know, we sing that song, time is filled with swift transition, and we really get older a whole lot quicker, and things begin to happen. As you get older, you know, your physique, you know. And somebody at church one time said, Brother Green, your hair's turning gray. I said, no, it's turning loose. You know, and we finally have it. You get the furniture disease, right? Because of gravity, we get that furniture disease. That's where your chest falls down in your drawers. You know, Stan touched on this the other night. I was talking, visiting with one of my widow ladies one time, and she said, Brother Green, I just got from cold last night. I said, did your teeth chatter? And she said, I don't know. We don't sleep together. But anyway, yeah. One lady said to me one night, I said, Preacher, I'm having trouble with both my husband and my furnace. I said, I don't understand. She says, while I'm watching one, the other one goes out. So, yeah. But Brandon, you get older, you know. And have y'all noticed where your driving, you know, ability kind of worsens a little bit. I don't know if we just don't pay as much attention to what, you know. I'm going to have to tell you, I heard that Dave Power got a call from Dee one day on his cell phone, and she said, honey, be really careful. I know you're out there on the interstate. And she said, they just come on the radio and said, some nut's driving the wrong way on I-77. And Dave said, it's not just one, honey, it's hundreds of them. Yeah. But in fairness, you know, one day Miss D. Powers was driving, you know, and she's out, and the police pull up. She had three other church ladies in the car with her, and the policeman pulls over, and she's upset because she's embarrassed in front of her friends here, and the policeman walks up to the car, and she says, sir, I want you to know that I wasn't speeding, because she said, I always follow the speed limit sign religiously. He said, "Miss, that's right. That's not your problem." He said, "The problem is you're going way too slow and you're backing up traffic." She said, "I'm not going slow." She said, "You see that sign right there? It says 14. She said, "That's how fast I was going." He said, "You're a little confused." He said, "That's Highway 14. He said, "That's not the speed limit sign." He said, "That's Highway 14. She scratched her head and said, "Oh, I get it now." And he said, "Well, I'm going to let you go with a warning." He said, "But I got to know." He said, "These other three ladies in the car with you," said, "they are just petrified with fear." He said, did I scare them that bad?" She said, "No, they'll be all right. In a little while, we just turned off Highway 119. Well, beloved, I'll tell you what, I better finish. But let me tell you, I had a dream one night that we lived in the future, modern day technology and medical things they can do now. Now they could do brain transplants. You know, they've been able to do different organ transplants. They can do brain transplants now. And I needed one. Don't wore this one out, man. So I go in the brain transplant place, you know, and I look in there, and they've got all these brains on the shelves just everywhere, you know. And I come to one brain, and it says, it gives a history on it. It says, David Powers, Williamstown, West Virginia. $5,000. I said, "Oh, that's pretty good." Come to another brain, Jim McGuigan, Ireland. His brain was $2,000. Man, this is impressive. Come to another brain, it wasn't even on the shelf. It was out in the middle in a display case, man. Purple velvet, man, lights around that thing in its own little case, you know. And it said, "Brain of Keith Hatcher, Paris, Tennessee. $45,000. Whoa, I said, "This is impressive." And I said to the salesman, "Sir, listen, I don't mean to insult you or anything." I said, "But I knew all three of these gentlemen. They were fine Christian gentlemen, wonderful preachers of the gospel." I said, "But I don't understand how Mr. Hatcher's brain could be worth so much more." And indeed, the man was insulted, and he looked at me and he said, "Sir, you don't understand." He said, "All these other brains are used." Anyway, love you, Keith. Brethren, Proverbs 15:13 says, "A joyful heart makes the face cheerful, and the cheerful heart has a continual feast." Also, Proverbs 17:22 says, "A joyful heart is good medicine." And Ecclesiastes 3:4 said, "There's a time to weep and a time to laugh." And we've done a lot of weeping in our ministry. I'm sure of that, and I'm sure you have. But there is a time to laugh, too, and I appreciate it. If I went a little too far, I'm sorry, y'all. I do. I really struggle with that. I really do. I'm trying to develop that filter. But anyway, two diplomas from Williamstown Bible College on my office wall. And everywhere we've ever been, you know, will say to me often when they come in my office and see those diplomas, they say, "I've never heard of that college. Where is it? Is it a major brotherhood school? Was it a large college?" And I'll say no to all of that. And I'll say, "But you know what? It was the best.
Yes, man.
It was absolutely the best." I said, "It changed my life. Literally changed my life." I said, I met my future wife. And that college literally placed me on a lifelong service to my Lord. Brethren, I was impressed going in this room over here on the side and seeing the number of baptisms that took place at Williamstown Church of Christ. I think we would be more impressed if it were possible for all of us that's gone through this college, if we were to count all the souls that have been won because God working through those people that went through this college. Williamstown Bible College was a godsend to me, literally it was. And I thank God for Williamstown Bible College. I thank God for each of you because you folk are Williamstown Bible College. And I appreciate your kindness today so very much. Thank you.